Thank you, Lynn. Thank you for the opportunity to share with everyone here. Financial literacy is an issue that we don't really, a topic that we don't really talk about. I would tell you, 16 years ago when I immigrated to Canada, it was a totally new experience for me. I remember growing up, you saved up the money somewhere, whether it was under the bed, under the mattress, somewhere safe. And when you had it all together, then you made your purchases. But we are currently in a credit system, and I find my 18-year-old son was recently given a credit card, and the credit limit was like $1,000. Within a couple months, it was max. And I have to try to get through to him how dangerous this thing is and how he's supposed to manage a credit card. A matter of fact, I advise him that he should pay off the card and cancel it because he's not yet ready to function in the credit system. So when I came to Canada, I knew very little about the credit system. And as, what should I say? As nature would have it, I had to look for credit as I came in. And when I approached a furniture store to purchase some furniture on financing, they said to me, "We can't." I said, "Why?" "We don't know you. You don't have credit history. We don't know if we can trust you. We can make this possible if you get someone to be a co-signer. Someone that we know would come and sign with you, and then we can trust you." I remember as I got the person, we went in, submitted the application. The stuff that I wanted to purchase was about $2,000. But when I submitted the application for the credit, I qualified for $6,000. So the salesperson in the store was trying to show me this and show me that and show me that and show me that. "Come on, you have $6,000. And I kept saying, "No, no, no. It's going to be $2,000 and no more." And so I stuck to my story and I left the store with $2,000 worth of credit. And that's where my credit history began. And along the way, I made a lot of mistakes. But because I was going to chapters and buying books and reading them and trying to understand my new context, I became more knowledgeable as to how things work. Before I get to my presentation, one experience that I remember, I was renting a house for $1,375 a month in 2003. Now, looking back, that was very expensive. That was about twice the mortgage payment for that house. Now, I didn't know. I was ignorant. So I was looking for a place that was comfortable for my family. But as I began to read and attend seminars and gaining a deeper understanding of the credit system and the market out there, I realized that I was doing something very foolish, that I was throwing away money, and I was in that arrangement for 16 months by that time. So what I did, I gave up the house. And I rented a half a duplex for $790. Then at the end of the first year, when the landlord wanted me to renew, by this time I was building a house. And when he wanted me to renew, and I said, well, listen, I would like to go month to month. And he said, no. This is the summer coming up, and I really can't go month to month. So I said, give me until October, month to month, from June to October. And he said no. So he went inside, wrote a letter, gave me notice to vacate. A matter of fact, he did me a favor, because when I moved to the next place, my rent went from $790 to $600. I was now smarter. I had a better, deeper understanding of how the system works, so I was able to make informed decisions. And people were asking me, why are you living there? That's a little apartment, it's in the slum of Calgary. But they didn't understand my vision. They didn't understand what I was doing. They didn't know that I was building a house, and I was only there July to January until I took possession of my house. So I've discovered over the years in ministry that a lot of people don't understand the power of family, the power of community when it comes to finances. And as we go through the seminar, you would understand why I'm saying this. Many families do not work together when it comes to finances. And that's why we underachieve. That's why we don't reach our full potentials as families, because we are working independently even though we are in the community of family. So, Family Finance 101. I tried to get from Lynn what is it she had in mind with reference to this presentation. And I think I capture, we would like to have a philosophical understanding of what are the essential components for successful financial management in context of the family. So what are we looking for? When we talk of family finance, what is it exactly we are looking for? I thought of starting with a definition of family. You know that there are all kinds of definitions out there, because this concept or definition of family, or what constitutes family, keeps changing. You know, recently Bill 10 here in Alberta ordered that we provide separate washrooms for a particular demographic in our society. And we're saying, okay, we can't force people into male-female constructs anymore. You can't go to a public school and see male washroom, female washroom. You have to see a washroom that is gender neutral. So the concept of family is changing. But I find that this definition that I put up there, it captures in my mind a balance and a solid definition of what constitutes family. It's a social unit of two or more persons related by blood, marriage, or adoption, and having a shared commitment to the mutual relationships. Notice it says having a shared commitment. And as you see people do family in our society, you realize that shared commitment is evidently lacking. That collaboration, that working together, that helping to build each other up. You would know that immigrants from certain parts of the world, they would come to Canada, a whole group of them would live in the same house. They would sleep on the floor. They would sleep on the sofa. They would have big meals, and they all would be cramped in that house. But they have a strategy. They have a commitment to building and helping one another go forward in this new society, this new home. So what they would do, everybody would put their financial resources behind setting up one of the members of that family. And once that one member goes out, the rest of them continue to pool the resources, including the one that leaves, to set up the second person. And they go from 12 persons living in one space to each of them having their own space. So that's what we're talking about, shared commitment to mutual relationships. We live in a very individualistic society where people are focused on themselves. What is in it for me? It's for me, myself, and I. We are just focusing on satisfying our personal needs, and we are not focusing on the benefit to the other people around us in our family. So we operate under this concept that says, get all you can all you get, then sit on the lid. So that's what we do. We get all we can all we get, and then we sit on it. It's for me, myself, and I. And that's the society in which we live. And this mindset is anti-family, as God ordained it to be. That we are supposed to be living in community where we build up each other. The concept of money. Some years ago, when some of my members noticed a particular interest or skill with reference to money matters, some of them categorically told me, you have lost your calling. Because this is secular stuff. You, as pastor, you should not be talking about this. So we see in our minds that material prosperity is incompatible with spirituality. As Christians, we tend to believe that we cannot be spiritually prosperous and at the same time be materially prosperous. So we tend to believe that we have to choose one of them. And quite naturally, we want to go to heaven. So which one would we choose? What we perceive to be spirituality. And we stay far from material prosperity, from money. And money is like a necessary evil. So we don't talk much about it. We don't focus on it. We just stay far from it. But it's a love-hate relationship. We need it. We want it. And at the other time, it makes us look as though we're not spiritual. So we don't want to go close to it. So money, what is money? The greatest block to a full understanding of stewardship is money, because when we talk stewardship, many people are focusing on money, right? To the average mind, stewardship and money are synonymous. This is due to the fact that the teaching, writing, and preaching on the subject of stewardship relates to money and or material things. So when we talk stewardship, many people think money. I don't know if you are familiar with that advertisement, hands in your pocket, right? I don't know if you heard that on the radio, hands in your pocket, that everybody is trying to get money from you. You go to do business in the bank, they're trying to sell you insurance, they're trying to sell you something. Everybody is trying to get after your money. What is money? Time plus talent equals life. Time plus talent equals money. So money is life. So if money ought to play or does play such an important role in our lives, in our spiritual lives, and in our secular lives, then we must understand what it is. If we don't understand what it is, then we are not going to be able to reach God's potential for us when it comes to financial management. So time plus talent equals life. Time plus talent equals money. So money is life. Financial foundation. Like building a house, you must build it from the ground up. Build it right, build it strong. So these are the components that one would have in a foundation that is laid for financial freedom. So these are topics, if you will. So when we say having a financial foundation, we are thinking of these topics, investment. And that's another world by itself. Because we go to the bank and the experts tell us, well, invest in this and invest in that and invest in, and we follow the expert advice. And sometimes in the process, we lose money, right? Instead of making money. So we have to be informed on the question of investment. We ought to focus on emergency fund. And I normally tell people, build an emergency fund. Now, an emergency fund is built, or what an emergency fund is a rainy day fund, right? For emergencies, for something happens. Somebody dies overseas and you have to go suddenly to that funeral. Somebody has a financial crisis and you have to make a contribution. You're preparing for any eventuality. So that's what an emergency fund is. The financial experts are advising that we should have 3 to 6 months worth of operating expenses. So for example, if it costs you about $3,000 to run the family and to do everything, the mortgage, the gas, the food, and all those things, school fees, if you have children in school, if it takes you $3,000 per month, you multiply 3,000 by 3 or 3,000 by 6. And every month, you put aside an amount towards building that safety net for your family. So if you're going to talk about a financial foundation, you have to think about an emergency fund. Debt management. And I would think I can do a whole seminar on how to get out of debt and walk you through it. But as we talk debt management, there are two things that we must understand. Compound interest. What is that? Simple interest. What is that? When someone offers you, like my son, a credit card, what kind of interest system is that? That obviously is compound interest, right? When someone offers you a line of credit, then what kind of interest system is that? That obviously is simple interest. So it tells you right off the bat, instead of taking a credit card, it would be advisable that you take a line of credit, because a line of credit will cost you much less than a credit card would cost you. For example, if you have a credit card and you're going to be carrying a balance, so what you would want to do, you would want to have a line of credit, so you take the money from the line of credit, pay off the credit card, and then pay back the line of credit. So the cost of borrowing is significantly less with simple interest. So you must understand debt management. How do you manage debt? From you put it on a triangle from highest to lowest, and you work on the weakest one, the lowest amount in the bottom, and you eliminate the first one, and you eliminate it from the bottom to the top, from the lowest to the highest. So you have to have a strategy as to how to get out of debt, because debt is bad. Okay, then protection. It's absolutely essential that we have sufficient coverage, right? You know, in the event that something happens, then you don't want to leave your family in financial distress. So these are the elements of building a solid financial foundation. So we went through that already. So let's move on to the next slide. And we cannot overemphasize this question of protection. If something happens and you come down with a disability, you want to make sure that your family is secure. And our goal is to reduce our liability and get out of debt as soon as possible. And we went over that. Okay, let's go to the next slide. Definition of stewardship. I like this one. The lifestyle of one who accepts Christ's lordship by walking in partnership with God and acting as his agent to manage his affairs on earth. Right? We are in what? Partnership with God. And sometimes we tend to think, well, once we give the 10%, then the rest is for us to do whatever we want. But no. Stewardship is not just of money, but stewardship is of what? Life. So your whole life is to be managed in accordance with God's original plan. It is God's order of man's relationship to God, not man's order to an organization. And we have people in the church, if they're not happy with the conference and they're not happy with the pastor that was assigned to them, they tend to want to hold back their tithes and their offerings. They tend to want to send their offerings and their tithes to another country or to another province because they're not happy with what's going on in their local field. Now, spiritually speaking, we should not do that because we are not committed to, we're not in relationship with an organization. We are in relationship with God. And when God says, bring all the tithes and the offerings into the storehouse, he means that. And he's saying, it is not yours. So you can't hold it back or put it as offering. Some people put their tithes as offering because they're mad. They work against the system, right? But we are saying stewardship means it is God's order for man's relationship to God, not man's order. Right? It's not your making. It is God's. And I think once we understand that, there will be greater resources in the church to do the work of the ministry. It is the practice of systematic and proportionate giving of time, talent, material possessions, based upon the conviction that these are a trust from God to be used on the services and benefit of mankind in grateful acknowledgement of Christ's redeeming love. That's what stewardship is. And so, if we are going to have financial freedom in our personal lives and in the lives of our families, then we must understand what is our stewardship, understanding, obligation, relationship. Right? Stewardship. So we are not just talking money, dollars and cents. We are talking about life and what God is expecting of us. Stewardship and money are not synonymous. So when we say stewardship, we are not just saying money. We are limiting stewardship when we think of stewardship just from the perspective of money. Stewardship is a relationship, right? As well as management. Money or material things are the mutual result of this management, right? Remember the parable of the talent? The parable of the talents. One guy was given one was given two, one was given five. The one with the five went out and invested the master's money, came back with another five. The one with the two went out and invested the master's money, came back with another two. The one with the one said, I know you are a mean man. I know you reap where you don't sow. And this is what I did. I dug a hole, kept your money safe so that I can return it to you. And the master's response was, you know that I'm a mean man. You know I reap where I don't sow. The least you could have done, the least you could have done is to deposit my funds with the bankers, and they would have given me usury, payment for usury on my return. The least you could have done.
And hopefully it wasn't 0.99%.
And they say, well, that's a good rate. So the master said, this is the least you could have done. And what did the master say to that servant? You wicked and slothful servant. You know, he took him, took the talent, cast him into outer darkness, gave the talent to the guy with the 10. Why? This is my perspective. He gave it to the guy with the 10 and not to the guy with the 4, because the master knew he could have trusted the guy with the 10 with more. To him who has, more will be given to him. And to him that does not have, even that which he has will be taken from him. So the master was confident that he could have trusted the guy with more. So the more he proved himself trustworthy, the more he got. The same principle applies for us. Malachi says, if we are faithful to God, God is going to open up the windows of heaven and he's going to pour us out blessings that there would not be room enough to receive it. Right? So we are told that if we are faithful on this side of heaven, we would receive blessings 100-fold. But we are pie in the sky Christians. We look yonder for everything. Yonder, over there, we're going to walk on streets of gold. Over there, we're going to plant vineyards and long enjoy the fruit of our labor. It's over there. But the Lord has promised not just over there. He has promised here too. He says in this life, you will be blessed 100-fold. And maybe we have as little as we do because we have not proven ourselves to be faithful with the little that was given to us. So two principles I take away from that. Whatever God gives to us, he's expecting us to grow it, to increase it. Whatever God gives to us, he's expecting us to be ready and able to give an account. What if you want to build a tower? Will you not sit down, estimate the cost to see if he has enough to complete it? For if he lays the foundation and is not able to finish it, everyone who sees it will what? Will ridicule him, saying, this fellow began to build and was not able to finish. So if we are going to achieve financial freedom, we must be intentional about creating a vision for our future. I wish I can get all our young people in one room where I can really talk some sense, because I've made so many mistakes in my life, in my ministry, that they can benefit from the mistakes that I have made, and I wish I can get them to smarten up, get them all in one room and really, you know, inform and educate them so that they can make better choices than I did. So we have to have a plan. If we don't have a plan, if we don't have a vision, then we're not sure where we are going. Visioning and budgeting are essential for successful financial management. Absolutely essential. But in marriages today, we see, did you know that disagreement over financial matters is the leading cause of marital failure. Did you know that? It is the leading cause, not one of the leading causes. It is the leading cause of marital failure. Disagreement over finances. You know about the prenuptial agreements, right? We sign, we make provision for the failure of the marriage. Because a prenuptial agreement is in the event that things don't work out. You're not going to walk in and take away my wealth. So I'm safeguarding myself with a prenuptial agreement. I love you, yes, but sign on the dotted line. So, husband and wife, I call this the roommate syndrome. You know, when you're in university, you rent a house together, right? And you split the bill, right? The rent, the food, the gas, the electricity, you split it in half, right? That's what we see in marriages today. Most married couples do not have one financial system. They have separate financial operations. And that is working against the interests of the family. Because the Bible says a man shall leave his father and his mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall be what? One flesh. One flesh. So we want to encourage our couples to find, I tell couples, if you can't trust your wife or your husband, you should have known that before you decided to get married. Because if I can't trust you, I shouldn't be married to you. Right? Husband and wife living as roommates where they share the costs and duties involved in running the house. They even divide the bed, right? You know, and I'm guilty of that because I have my side of the bed, right? Every time I want to go to the bed, if my wife is on my side, I tell her to go over, right? Go to your side. You know, this is my side. I roll on to this side of the bed, and that's where I feel comfortable. We even divide the bed. So we it's as though we just have, rather than have a marriage, we just have an arrangement where we just split the duties, we split the money, we split everything. And that is problematic for marriages today. You know why it's problematic? We are underachieving. We are underachieving. We can reach heights unknown if we find a way, husband, wife, and if there are children in the home, if we find a way of working together. And that's what I advocate. Four transcendent planning principles for financial success. Number one, spend less than you earn. Right? We usually spend what? More than we earn, right? And sometimes we have no way of gauging how much we are spending. Sorry about that. So we should spend less than we earn. We are living in a consumer society. You've seen most of our garages are filled, not with cars, but with things that we've acquired, that we've purchased. And when you look at compound interest in terms of investment, had we invested those funds, when we get to retirement age, we'll be millionaires. Right? And that's why I want to get to our young people. Because if they start at 18, by the time they get to, you know, retirement age, they should be financially secure. And once I asked a young man in my church, so when are you leaving home? He said, Pastor, am I crazy? Leave home? I have free light. I have free internet. I have free food. I have a room for myself. Where am I going Leaving home to go where?
I'm staying as long as my parents would tolerate me. Avoid the use of debt. Number three, maintain liquidity. We spoke about the emergency fund. Maintain liquidity. And number four, set goals. Right? Even if you're retired, you should have goals. Hello? Even if you're retired, you should have goals. Yes.
Yes, I'd like to comment on that.
Yes.
You know, we're senior citizens and we get a little senior allowance like every month of $65 like each one of us.
Mm-hmm.
I put that into an account when our taxes come in, I've got enough to pay our taxes. We don't miss the $65, but by putting that away,
wow.
There's our taxes, we can pay our taxes.
Wow. That's good planning. Excellent. There you go. So we should have we should set goals, right? Okay. Create a roadmap for your family. Yes.
You know, you're preaching like a typical Adventist preacher. Yeah.
Okay.
And you forget one thing that's the second tie that Deuteronomy 14 tells us about.
Yes.
I very seldom ever hear that preached by a stewardship director.
Yes.
I wonder why, because it should be included there if you want, in that first part, if you want to find financial success.
There you go. And you're right. We don't usually talk to that because we tend to think that we are encroaching on people's free choice. Is as though
it's for our own pleasure.
For our own benefit.
See, yeah. We talk about all these other things, but you know, you got to have that part for your own pleasure. That's Deuteronomy 14, that second time.
There you go. That's a treasurer, union treasurer, and conference treasurer talking. Praise God. Praise God. Thank you for that. So, if you're going to have a roadmap, I think that these elements should be in your finance, in your planning, in your visioning. This is visioning in general for the family. You must know what your mission is. There are too many people going around living life without any direction, any purpose. So you must know, what is your mission? What is the mission of my family? What is my personal mission? Why am I here? Okay, then we go to the vision. Then we go to the objectives. Then we go to the goals. Now, the difference between an objective and a goal, I'll give you in an example. I would like to get married. That's an objective. I would like to get married by age 25. That's a goal. So the difference between an objective and a goal is that the goal has a timeline to it, because you can spend the next 40 years desiring to get married. But the fact that you say that you would like to get married at age 25, now that you're 23.5 and no girlfriend in sight, you got to be, hurry up, you got to be doing something, because the time is running out on you, right? But if you just say, well, I would like to get married, you can go 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, and you still would like to get married. So the goals help to give you that push and help you to. So we divide the goals into short term, long term, and then there ought to be a system of evaluation. So these components must be present as you seek to create your roadmap. Now, the mission, because some people, I put this in because some people don't understand what we mean when we say mission, vision, objectives, goals, and evaluation. So I put the questions. And the answer to these questions would tell you what your mission, what your vision is. So mission is, what is our purpose as a family? What is our purpose? Vision, where do we want to go? Objectives, what do we want to achieve?
goals, when do we want to achieve it? And evaluation, how are we doing? We ought to examine ourselves to see whether or not we are on course. And that is an absolute essential. Couples must work together to establish one financial system. Do you agree with me? Do we have any testimonies of the fact that this does work? It is a tremendous asset to have husband and wife working together with one financial system. Yes?
No, yeah. Just go from personal experience. My wife and I have one bank account. She reconciles that bank account. She reconciles any credit card expenses. She knows exactly where the money goes. I have complete trust in her that she won't spend any more out of it than she knows we should.
There you go.
And vice versa. And it's worked 100% in our lives for 49 years now.
Oh, my word. So you're working together.
We work together.
And that's an absolute essential, because when you divide your resources, then you are not able to achieve the goals that you would like to achieve. Right? So we are not roommates in university. We are marriage partners. Talking about finance, I thought that we should be talking also about needs fulfillment. There are too many people in marriage and in relationship and in family that are not thinking about helping to meet the needs of the members of the family. And that's an absolute essential. So Abraham Maslow says these are the most basic human needs. Number one is the lowest. And number five is the highest. And quite easily, as human beings, we can meet our physiological needs. It's easy, right? For food, for clothing, we can meet that quite easily. Safety needs, yeah. The house has a lock on it. There's an alarm system that if an intruder is coming, then we advise that some foreign elements are coming in. That's easy too. But when we get to number three, it's a bit of a challenge. Because how do we make our family members feel that they are part of the family, they're valued by the family, they're loved by the family, they have a place in the family? How do we make someone feel love and belong, that they belong? Right? We don't do very well at paying compliments in our families. Neither do we do very well at receiving compliments. A couple of years ago, I had to teach a young man here on this campground how to receive. He would give to the world, but he would not accept a glass of water from anybody. Because that signified dependence. And he is independent. And he is not taking stuff from people because he is independent. So some of us, we don't even know how to receive love. If someone pays you a compliment, ladies, about your dress, oh, that dress is pretty. Don't say that you had it for a long time. Don't say it's an old dress. Don't say, you know, oh, this stupid dress. Just say thank you. You know, learn to receive compliments. Because when you're in the family, you're supposed to be catering to the needs of the members of the family. You're supposed to be building one another up. And then esteem. How do we make our spouses, how do we make our children feel? Do they feel that they're valued? Do they feel good about themselves?
Do they, you know, sometimes you can have the world of money. You can buy anything and go anywhere, but you're not happy. You're not fulfilled. Why? Because those basic human needs are not met in the family. And sometimes the kids don't need money. And sometimes we do all kinds of things, sacrifice our relationship with our children in pursuit of money, thinking that having money is what is going to make them happy. And all they want is affirmation. All they want is an embrace. All they want reassurances. I love you. Right? I love you. You're special. I'm thinking about you. Esteem. And then number five, self-actualization. Now, self-actualization, Maslow says, is reaching your full potential. What if, as a family, you each are committed to helping the members of the family reach their full potential? What kind of success would you have in that family? What kind of spirit, what kind of energy will there be in the family? It's because you are doing everything to build up one another and to help each other to reach your full potential. So that's an absolute essential. The importance of having a family budget cannot be overemphasized. If you're going to manage your finances as a family, if you're going to achieve financial success, rather than your money telling you where it wants to go, you tell your money where it should go. And that's a budget. When you have a budget, you're telling your money where it should go. So every month, you should be preparing a zero budget. That means income, $100, expenditure, $100. That does not signify that you're going to spend the $100, but you are allocating that $100, you're putting it in wherever it's supposed to go, and every month you're making sure that you're not doing impulsive buying or impulsive spending. So define your financial goals, plan your budget together, and always put God first. Yes?
Yes, I'd just like to mention this thing of tithing.
Yes.
You know, I've been paying tithe for 55 years. You know, I've become an Adventist 20 years old.
Wow.
I'm 75, and you know what? We've always had food on the table, we've always had it, we've never missed a leg. It just goes to show that God is faithful.
God is faithful. Praise God. And we should be faithful too, because if we are not faithful, we're denying ourselves a blessing. Matthew 6:33-34. But seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. So we must put God first. Budgeting is necessary to accomplish your financial goals. If you do not budget, chances are that you are just living from pay period to pay period and on the verge of financial disaster, according to George E. Reed. And this is a good book you would want to buy. It's an Adventist author, and I think the ABC sells this book. It's Your Money, Isn't It? Pardon me?
Your book name is Your Money.
It's Your Money, Isn't It? So, and he's Adventist. 7 Steps to Effective Financial Management. This is my last slide. Prayerfully seek God's direction regarding your lifestyle. And sometimes we take on a lot of stuff in life and God is not in it, right? God is not in it. So we must seek God's direction. Number 2, and there's a Bible passage for each. Learn to be content. Right? Contentment is what? Great what?
Gain.
Contentment.
I had a neighbor, man, he was so miserable. Oh, my word. He would watch what's happening in my yard, and he has a problem with this. You know, how come you're doing this, and who are you choosing to do the landscaping, and who? People become so competitive. And once he wrote to the city and told them that I am devaluing his property because I wasn't doing my landscaping when he felt that I should have done it. So I got a letter from the city stating that the neighbor has complained. Learn to avoid coveting. Don't covet. Don't covet. These are sound financial management strategies. Do not determine your lifestyle by comparing it with others. And you know, we are living on credit, right? The goal should be for us to live debt-free. That should be our goal. And we cannot be debt-free if we continue to incur debt. Freely enjoy whatever you spend in the Spirit. The Spirit of God should be guiding you. You shall hear the voice behind you saying, this is the way, walk in it. Number 6, make an effort to live more simply. You know, all the stuff that we amass, we really don't need them, right? I used to go, let me give you quickly, I know the time is over, but I used to go to the Marks Warehouse. You know, it was an outlet store. And they had things on sale, right? Markdown. Like a jersey that would be $45, regular price, would be sold for $5. So every time I was on 36th Street in the Northeast in Calgary, I had to go to the Marks Warehouse because there are lots of deals there. And I began collecting these $5 t-shirts or jerseys, and I would get maybe 4, 5 each time. And before I knew it, in my closet, on the shelf, I had stacks of shirts. Cheap, real deal. Stacked up there, doing what? When would I ever use them? And I came to my senses and decided not to drive by 36th Street. Because there was temptation there. I got addicted to $5 shirts.
But it made you feel good when you bought it. The Bible tells you, buy something you desire once in a while.
Once in a while. So we have to make sure that we live make an effort to live a more simple life. We don't need all these complications that we put into our lives. Do not be conformed to this world. We must remember that if we put God first, as Pastor Bill said, Brother Bill said, when it comes to Deuteronomy 14, we should strive to be faithful to God, and if we give him a double tithe, he is going to bless us.
Right? Take a tithe for yourself. That's the part you often miss in financing. I find that Adventist preachers, they forget to tell you that you give the Lord a tithe, but you're supposed to set a tithe apart for yourself too. That's Deuteronomy 14.
There you go. There you go.
If you do that, you'll find that's the best part.
The Lord is going to bless you. Thank you.
And you can buy what your heart desires.
you live like no one else, according to Dave Ramsey. You live like no one else so that you can live like no one else. Okay, Lynn. Quickly, just give, let's give out the one with the budget. Let's give each person a copy. This is just to reinforce the need for us to if we are not doing this, to come up with a budget for a family. No, she has them. Yeah. Right? So this is a monthly income and expense budget. So, you know, you have something to work with. that we make sure that every dollar that we earn is accounted for. And God must be, as we said, at the top of our agendas. Okay, so if you notice, it has all these, you notice the tithes at the top and offerings. We know that, tithes and offerings. And I took this from Ed's book, It's Your Money, Isn't It? Ed Reed. Okay, so this is an example. Then I want you to give them the personality. Because I discover in family and doing stewardship, I'm pretty new in this responsibility, but I've discovered it is key if we're going to work effectively together as family members, we must understand one another. So could we give them out the personality type? So we must know what personality type your family members are so that you can know how to approach them, how to ask questions, how to make suggestions, how to, you know, rope them into the scheme of things in the family. So personality types. So as you read over this material in your spare time, you would be able to identify what your dominant personality type is and what your secondary personality type is. So each person, you know, would have a dominant and a secondary. Okay, so I thought of giving you that. And then for the homeowners, I got this article some years ago on mortgages. And it's absolutely essential that we understand what happens in the mortgage sector. And I believe that many people are not managing their finances well is because they do not have the education. They don't have the know-how. Because I can teach you how to pay down a mortgage. I can show you an amortization schedule and how it works so that you can get out of debt faster and experience financial freedom. So my hope that this conversation that I started here today would, you know, blossom and expand in your families. And you know what? When I came to Canada, I discovered this information, this knowledge. I didn't keep it to myself. I began sharing it with my family members. I began sharing it with the church members. So what I want you to do for me, whatever you captured here today, I want you to find someone, at least someone, one person at least, and share it with that person. We ought to be proactive in helping people to experience financial freedom. Many people are enslaved, and people can't come to church and serve God. They can't contribute to the cause of God because they are debt-stricken, and they have no idea how to get out of it. So you, whatever knowledge you've acquired today, whatever information that you've acquired today, share it with someone. Share it with your children, with your grandchildren, with the neighbor, with the church member, whoever. Empower someone. And I am here as the stewardship director of the conference because of that very principle. Because had I kept my knowledge and information to myself, the conference leadership would not have seen what I have done in the field of stewardship for them to ask me to lead out in this area in the conference. So it's important for us to make sure that we're empowering other people, building them up, and making them, you know, bringing them closer to the goal of financial freedom. I thank you for the opportunity, Lynn, to share with you.
You know, I find that as long as I take my tithe and offerings off first, there's always enough to go around.
Amen. Make me a cake first. Remember that widow? Bake me a cake first. And she said, well, we're just going to make the last bread and eat it and die. The prophet said, give me a cake first. And there was oil in the barrel and there was meal, and they never ran out. So we can't improve on God's plan. That's God's plan. And we can't improve on it. All we need to do is to be faithful. God bless you. If you have any personal questions, you can ask me after.
Thank you very much, Reynolds. Really appreciate those principles. It never hurts to hear them more than once you've heard them before. They're all been through. Well, let's bow our heads. Father in heaven, we thank you for being here for